This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. The number of homeless children nationwide is increasing, and that's creating all sorts of issues for the children to deal with besides the usual stresses of being a student. We'll discuss the issue this hour with Lori Eifert, the Project Home Coordinator for Covington Independent Public Schools, Ramin Mohajer, the Executive Director of Faces Without Places, and Jared Spizak, the Outreach Coordinator for Brighton Center. You can join our conversation. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Thank you all for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having
us.
I thought a good place to start out with would be, and it may seem too simple to start there, but a definition of homelessness. I think maybe some people perhaps think, you know, when they hear the word homeless, that somebody that's living on the street or staying in a shelter, but that's not necessarily the full definition of homelessness. Who wants to try that?
Well, the Covington Independent School District, we go by the educational definition, and that is a family that is either living doubled up or in shared housing due to an economic hardship, living in a motel, trailer, or living in cars, or emergency or transitional shelters such as the Homeward Bound Brighton Center's youth shelter or welcome house, and as well as anyone that's living as an unaccompanied youth going couch to couch.
So that would, if we could simplify that then, it's just they're staying someplace, but it's not necessarily a home that they own or rent for themselves.
Correct, because many a times if they're living doubled up with another family member or friend, over time, they're using their resources, and it causes a lot of, you know, trouble for the family, and sometimes they have to move on.
Before we went on the air, somebody mentioned something about a HUD definition of homelessness or housing and urban development. How does that differ maybe from the educational definition?
Right, so that's a little bit of a narrower definition, and that really focuses on certain housing situations and doesn't necessarily include some of those doubled and tripled up situations. And so Faces Without Places, an organization, we also try to adopt the educational definition. And, you know, we find on average the students move 7 to 8 times a year between all of those temporary housing situations that Lori mentioned. And so that all sort of falls under the purview for us.
Jared, do you want to add anything on a definition?
You know, a big thing that we work with in the street outreach program is people who are sleeping in their cars. They're doubled up. So they're oftentimes staying with family members, and what happens sometimes is you might be staying with an aunt or an uncle, and then a week after you've been there, they can't afford for you to stay there anymore. So it's a lot of issues that we deal with. So it's a pretty similar, you know, situation.
And so your location could actually change. You could be with a friend maybe, or you said an aunt for a week, and then you go to another friend or family member, you know, the next week.
Yeah, a lot of times, especially with, you know, younger adults and children, is that you might be staying with someone and you might have an argument with your friend or not get along with them. I mean, the same situations that, you know, many of us were in. But the difference is you're staying at their house, and so they might just ask you to leave.
So the McKinney-Vento Homeless Education Act, what it does is it just provides stability academically for these students. So even though they might be switching from house to house, they might be out of our school district area, living in the more of the Kent County or Boone County area, we do our best to try to keep them in their same school, their school of origin, so that they don't fall behind academically, which lots of times with moving 2 to 3 years is what they fall behind.
National statistics say that 1 in 45 children experience homelessness in America each year, which works out to just more than 1.6 million children. Can we drill down on that number and how that compares to, you know, the greater Cincinnati area, northern Kentucky?
Right. So then in greater Cincinnati, there's different numbers. One that we've seen is that in Hamilton County, 1 in 79 children experience homelessness on any given day. Also, there's some estimates that there are around 6,000 to 7,000 homeless youth in the greater Cincinnati area each year. Unfortunately, any estimates are very hard to get precise. As we discussed with the definition of homelessness, it's really a moving target, and we largely have an invisible homeless population that is at play here with the families that are moving up and the doubled up. That it's much harder than just adding up the numbers of kids on the street or kids at shelters.
And Lori, what about in Kentucky?
For Kentucky right now, last year they ended with the kids from ages 3 to 21. They identified 33,000 in the state of Kentucky. At our school district, we are 1 out of 74 school districts that received the grant funding. There's only 17 of us that have that funding to support these kids. The rest of them have to do it. but they don't have the funds available. We identified 669 students in the school year of 2012, and last year we ended with 624 students. We're seeing an increase from 10% of our population from back in 2008 to about 14% of our population, to even as high as 15 at one point.
But again, before we started talking on the air, we were talking off air about a show that we did, I think it was in July or August, where we were talking about the families that were homeless. And you said that's the big driver of this, that families end up homeless, but it's hard to keep them together in a shelter situation, because there are some shelters that won't accept teenagers, and there's some shelters that are more than willing to take maybe a wife and the kids, but aren't necessarily willing to take the husband.
Yes, that's correct. It's very difficult. Just each shelter has its own stipulations and rules, and to get the entire family unit, which is so crucial, together is often very difficult. And the same thing we found with the doubled up situations, where maybe an uncle or grandmother is okay taking one of the kids for a couple of weeks, but the chances of them wanting to take on the entire family for an extended period of time is much more slim.
Is there an average length of time that these children are homeless? Is it, as short as a week, a month, several months?
The law states that there's no limit on homelessness. However, we identify the students as they enroll or as the school year progresses. And once they're identified, even if they achieve permanent housing, they remain identified for the remainder of the school year based on the law. And then at the end of the school year, we start all over again. We might have same children identified the next year, but we have to go through that process of eliminating and seeing what their living circumstances are. The biggest barrier is like what Jarrett was talking about, his shelter. They only hold teenagers. So if you want to elaborate on the 18-year-olds that we have trouble with, they're still in school, but they don't have a place to stay.
Sure. So our Homeward Bound shelter, the Brighton Center Homeward Bound shelter, serves youth ages 11 to 17. And so last year we had 106 youth actually stay residentially in our shelter. And they can stay anytime from, a couple hours until a relative might come pick them up. And we've had some youth stay there for well over a year, just depending on their situation. But a big barrier that we have, or that we get to, would be those 18 to 24-year-olds. They can stay in adult shelters, but the adult shelters aren't really designed for that age range. They don't teach necessarily the life skills that an 18-year-old needs, because when you turn 18, you become an adult legally, but you don't really have the skills necessary to be self-sufficient. And so that's sort of our mission at Brighton Center, even, is to, increase the self-sufficiency through the programs that we have. So it's a big problem, is actually finding a place for these 18, 19-year-olds to stay.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking today about the increasing number of homeless children. If you'd like to join the conversation, 513-419-7100. Again, 513-419-7100. Or you can email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Lori, in the education field, is this something that parents are upfront about, that they're having problems? Do they talk to school officials, or do they not want to share this information? And if they don't, then what are the signs that you're looking for?
Well, lots of times the families are a little hesitant. They think that we're going to get social services involved, and they have a stigmatism of thinking social services is actually going to remove their children from the home. Many a cases, social services are coming involved. They're actually helping to do family preservation. So that's a myth that we have to try to dispel. The other thing we work with them on is if they're looking, we've noticed children who are wearing the same clothing day after day. They're looking unkept or needing hygiene items or hoarding food if they're hungry, and we're seeing them go through the food line and asking for more. Those kind of things that we try to get the teachers to be aware of.
Now, are you limited on by law of what you can ask?
I am not allowed by law to work with any of the landlords. I can't call and say, is this family being evicted or is this family truly displaced? I have to go off of just what the family is willing to tell me. And it's about building a rapport. We have a great family resource centers and youth service centers in our district. The coordinators are wonderful about knowing what's going on with our kids and the families. And I use them as an aid to help me identify these kids and work together as a team to provide the services that they need.
Is this a problem? Has there been a large increase in this issue, you say, in the last several years with the You know, we've been hearing about the increasing number of foreclosures. Has that driven this problem and made it worse?
That's definitely something that we've found and have seen in the literature about this, is that, you know, many people associate homelessness with mental illness and drug dependency, and obviously those things are a factor, but the largest causes of homelessness, both in Cincinnati and nationally, are actually lack of affordable housing and loss of income. And so in recent years with the economic downturn, those numbers have really increased, and families that, you know, were doing just fine before, one parent or both parents lose their jobs. You know, many of the students, over probably 80% of the students we serve, are single mother homes. And so if that mother loses her job, they can be forced into the situation and or has a difficulty with a foreclosure or paying higher rents. And so there really is a strong correlation there.
Jared, what about the clients that you're working with? Has this gotten worse with the increasing number of foreclosures?
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely difficult. Our main goal at the Homeward Bound shelter be to reunify them with their family, but it's impossible to reunify them with their family if their family doesn't have a stable living situation. So last year we were able to reunify 75% of our youth that came through our shelter with their families. And while that we would like that number to be higher, in reality that's good, because a lot of them still are looking for that stable home. But we're finding a lot with that 18 to 24 range that the foreclosures and not having a stable living environment is really making it more difficult on them, and that they might become 18 and an adult, and their family might say, well, we can't afford for you to stay here anymore. You know, we need to move to a smaller apartment. We need to, you know, go live with grandma or grandpa to sort of combine our resources. And so the 18, 19-year-olds are the ones that are getting pushed out, you know, and being told, you're 18, this is time to start your life. So
is there a breakdown on, and we'll get into this a little later too, but the versus the, you know, the runaway versus someone that's in a family? Does it tend to be predominantly the homeless children? Does it tend to be, you know, in a family situation as opposed to, you know, a runaway teen?
I think it depends on which you know, social service agency and all of that you're looking at. I think that, you know, some like Lighthouse and Brighton focus on the teen population. We provide services up to age 18, but our focus is on ages 5 to 12 with some of our programming, our summer camp and our mentoring programs. And so in those situations, almost always the child is in a family situation. It's just that the family is having, you know, a hard time making ends meet and finding a stable location.
Do you want to weigh on that, Lori?
Yes. About 72% of our population that have been identified are living doubled up. It's only a small portion that are unaccompanied youth that are living couch to couch. And lots of times what I do in those circumstances is hopefully get them in the Brighton Center and get them into the Homeward Bound program so we can monitor their grades and give them a place to stay. But that's a small portion compared to the rest of the doubled up families.
We're discussing the increasing number of homeless children and the various problems that can create. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. We're talking about an increasing number of homeless children with Lori Eifert, the Project Home Coordinator for Covington Independent Public Schools, Ramin Mohajer, the Executive Director of Faces Without Places, and Jared Spizak, the Outreach Coordinator for Brighton Center. You can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, the number 513-419-7100. Coming up in about 20 minutes, you'll hear from a writer who followed some soldiers after their service in Iraq and the challenges they faced with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Certainly, we want to get to the services that you all provide for homeless children, but before we move on to that, let's just talk about some of the general issues that these homeless children face, and they can be health-related, they can be education-related. Ramin, you want to go first on that?
Sure. Yeah, unfortunately, it really does run the gamut, and we see all different sorts of issues. I would say that lack of transportation is a huge issue, especially when it comes to the education of these children, because of the constant moving that we mentioned, and then also the difficulty of access to a reliable car and the cost of public transportation. Also, health issues are particularly acute with this population. Often, you know, the other health issues that just apply to regular kids but get unchecked and aren't as followed up on. And because of lack of transportation, that applies to getting to doctor's appointments and lack of health insurance and all of those things. And then finally, just because of the lack of financial resources, you know, just simple things like school supplies, like, you know, having money to do your laundry, all sorts of different things like that become much more difficult. And then obviously food insecurity is a big issue that these families face.
Lori?
Well, I'd have to agree with the transportation and the lack of affordable housing would be another one that I think that is a problem in our area. A lot of the families have the first month rent, but they don't have the security deposit to put down along with it. So that causes a problem. We have to try to link ourselves to other resources in the community. And there's just not many resources out there to help families with that. Transportation, although it's a problem, through our district, we're able to get the kids to school. And at least for those 8 hours during the day, those children are getting educated so their parents can look for jobs and can look for some other resources to help them. The only other thing I would think to add on that would just be, like we were talking about the food issues. There's a lot of pantries in the area. Jarrett, did you want to elaborate on any of that?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, obviously, with the transportation being partially an issue, but then the food insecurity is a big deal. A lot of people don't know, especially youth. It's hard to do schoolwork if you don't know where you're going to eat dinner that night, where you're going to sleep that night. So it's a big problem that they have as far as just focusing in school. So you might be in the same school and in the same classes and everything, but when you become homeless, you have different factors that you have to worry about. So even though they might not be switching schools, which is obviously a problem as well, is if you keep switching different schools, you're behind and you're just constantly playing catch up. But even going to the same school, having that food insecurity, having potentially domestic violence issues at home, drug abuse, any of those things that our homeless children are dealing with, it makes it a bigger factor when you're trying to, you know, just study and pass your grades. So,
To elaborate on that, we've just recently started serving breakfast and dinners at some of our schools now, so that the kids who are going through circumstances like this, if they get to school early enough, can have a breakfast and stay after school for tutoring and receive a meal.
There was a website, dosomething.org, that 11 facts about homeless teens. The one that stuck out to me was, according to their research, about 75% of homeless teens use alcohol or drugs as a means to self-medicate to deal with traumatic experiences. Do you see that here locally?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times, especially if you're over 18, you aren't actually eligible for a medical card in Kentucky unless you are pregnant. So a lot of our young men, especially, that's an outlet for them. Getting sufficient mental health services is still an issue, even with medical insurance or a medical card. You might be able to see someone, but you might not be able to see a counselor maybe once every 2 weeks, once every month. So the medication isn't monitored how it should be. And so that definitely leads to, you know, using drugs or alcohol for self-medication.
We've talked about the issues, and so now let's talk about what you do to help these homeless children. Lori, let me start with you. I mean, you've talked about some of it, but just give me a concrete, this is what Covington Independent Public Schools do for homeless children.
Well, we have three sources of funding. We have the McKinney-Vento Homeless Education Act funding that we get federally through a grant every 3 years. And then we have funding through Faces Without Places and funding through Neediest Kids of All. And through all those, we supply the kids seniors' caps and gowns for graduation, uniform, clothing, coats, eyeglasses and eye exams, before and after school tutoring, hygiene kits, school supplies, and then, of course, backpacks and shoes when needed. Those are just a few of the things we do.
Now, again, you were talking about the issue of transportation, that you try to keep them in their school. Mm-hmm. So how does that work? So if they're in, I don't know, Erlanger one day and Newport next week, how does that work?
Well, we use a cab as a last resort if we have to. At Your Service Taxi has been good enough about working out a contract with us, and so has Community Cab, and they give us a deal to get the children to school. We try to use busing whenever possible. Our district has really gone out of their way to make it possible for these kids. If they're in Kenton County School District, we collaborate with them, and maybe they bus one way and we bus the other way. And then also just using Tank and Metro passes for those kids that are maybe staying in Cincinnati and having to get across to Holmes High School to go to school.
I was going
to
ask that. So if somebody ends up on the Ohio side of the river, but they can still stay in the Covington school system?
It's based on feasibility. If the child is an elementary student, it might be in their best interest to enroll in a school where they're residing. They have the right to stay in their school of origin until they can get permanent housing. But again, we base it all on, are they coming to school? Are they doing well in school? How's their attendance and grades going? Because if they're not being successful, it might be causing more of a barrier for them. It might be better for them to enroll elsewhere.
Ramin, what about your group?
Right. So at Faces Without Places, our mission is to remove barriers to education for children experiencing homelessness. So we're really focusing on the educational piece, which we think is the key to breaking the cycle. And so the first arm of what we do is educational and enrichment programming. And so we have a summer camp that's with academic lessons to help these kids catch up with their peers academically in the morning. We've had great increases in math and literacy scores and all of that. And then also fitness and enrichment opportunities, trying to give these students first opportunities they've never had before in the afternoons. Then we have a year-long mentoring program that we do with Xavier University and the Cincinnati Zoo. And then we have a few programs on-site at the shelter. So we have a My Little Library reading program where volunteers read weekly to kids at the shelters and do arts activities with them. And then also a birthday club program where businesses and church groups can throw parties for kids in shelters, many of whom we figured out were not having birthday parties at all. And then the other main arm of what we do for these kids is the Educational Stability Collaborative. And Lori and Covington are one of our main partners there, where that's where we help out with the school supplies, providing Metro passes and laundry services and all of those types of things to make sure the kids have the actual necessities to get to school.
Jarrett, we've talked a little bit about the activities of the Brighton Center, but what do you do to help these homeless children?
Sure. So Brighton Center has 39 programs in the Northern Kentucky in the eight counties, but specifically our Homer Bound shelter in our youth services department. At the shelter, we can house youth, 16 youth between the ages of 11 and 17. We provide them with counseling while they're there. We do life skills groups. We also feed and clothe them, make sure they get to school, partially due to the Lori's program, which is very helpful. But we also have the street outreach program, so we're actually going out onto the streets, under bridges and libraries, trying to reach out to the youth that are actually homeless. And most of those would be your 18 to 22-year-olds. And so our goal is to actually coordinate the services that they're going to get, so to connect them with local providers. So it sort of runs the gambit between whether they need help with mental health services or if they need help finding an apartment, we can help them do that. So Brighton Center has many different programs. So we're blessed with being able to sort of connect them with a resource that we already have in-house. But I think the biggest thing that we're able to do, really is sort of get out there, build the rapport with the youth and actually get them to trust us enough to get into the programs.
That was one thing I was going on. What is the first step in starting this process and working with these families and kids? What's the first thing that you try to do?
Well, the first thing, as soon as they're identified, we try to reach out to the family to see what needs they might have, whether it be coming to school, and transportation needing to be provided, if they have the materials to come to school and the clothing. For some of, we have a few schools that have uniforms, so we try to make sure that they have those readily available to them. And then the other thing is just letting them know that that they can call me as another form of a resource for them, to link them to community agencies that can provide them with getting into housing or to help them get a medical card or whatever else they might need.
Jarrett, when you're working with these teens and, they don't want their parents contacted, maybe a case of abuse, is that something that you're able to do?
If they're going to stay overnight at our shelter, we have 48 hours. We have to notify their guardian if they're under 18. If they're over 18, then obviously they're an adult technically, and so at that point we don't have to, alert anyone. But if they're under 18, then yes, there's that stipulation and we have 48 hours, but in reality we let the parent or guardian know as soon as possible. And if they're alleging abuse, then we would also call the cabinet, and they would typically do an investigation, which takes typically about 2 weeks, and they would investigate the home to see if there is any validity to that abuse claim. And if not, then they'll send the youth back home. And if there is, then we might keep them longer while they try to sort of work that out. So.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. And if you have a question, 513 419-7100, 513-419-7100. Ryan from Avondale has been waiting patiently. Ryan, go ahead. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm actually a Xavier student in the occupational department, and I just finished a fieldwork placement at Cincinnati Children's. So we actually dealt with a lot of children who were facing some socioeconomic difficulties, but potentially homeless children. And I was just wondering what sorts of resources were available to children with diagnosed disabilities, and whether you all feel like your shelters are necessarily equipped to deal with those sorts of children.
Jared, who wants to?
Yeah, I mean, our shelter at the Homeward Bound shelter is equipped to deal with disabilities to a certain extent. I mean, we have, for someone who would have some sort of physical disability, we have a ramp, we have shower facilities that they could use on the first floor area. And so, and then we also have the counselor on staff that can provide some interventions if necessary, if someone were to have, a mental disability. So we try to work, with the population that we have. I mean, our goal would be to provide them shelter and safety no matter what the circumstances. So even if that, we have to bring in someone from the outside to sort of help us with that, we would do that. But I think we're equipped to work with, whoever would need help.
Lori or Ramin, you want to add anything to that?
Well, we're not a shelter, we're a school. But
right.
What we do is as soon as we find out that somebody does have a disability, I alert our special ed directors. We have an elementary director and we have a middle and high school director who would make sure that the child is getting what they need academically, whether identified as homeless or whether they're in our school anyway.
Ramin, is there anything you want to...
Right. I mean, one thing along those lines, we often end up just referring to, when we find a student that has disability, referring to agencies that are more equipped to deal with it. But I know that some of the shelters in the city, including the IHN shelter in Walnut Hills, are working with students of preschool age and identifying developmental disabilities in an early age. And that's a program that we are supporting them with. And then once those disabilities are located, giving resources. I know they're working with UC on that and allowing them to and giving them appointments with places that can really focus on improving those developmental disabilities at an early age.
Ryan, we appreciate your call. Lori, is there an average age of the child that you're working with? I know we heard Jarrett, his focus is mainly teenagers, but what about, is that the average age that you're finding in the schools, or are they younger than teens?
No, they can be any age from ages 3 to 21 that I can serve, but the average age nationally is 9, which I find staggering. For a lot of people don't realize that. They think that, they mostly think of people who are living under bridge and things, but we see a lot of young youth as well.
What do people need to take away? Is this like a hidden problem that, it's here in the tri-states, here in Ohio and, Kentucky, but the average, the person in the tri-state doesn't necessarily know that this is going on, that, they think homeless is just the adult population.
I think a lot of people think that it's lack of somebody wanting to get a job or lack of making an effort, but that's not true. A lot of our families are very well, rounded individuals who are trying to get jobs, who are trying their best. It's just very tough time out there for a lot of our families right now. And I think that they're doing the best they can with what they have available to them. And a lot of them, it's their first time experiencing homelessness, so they don't even know what resources are out there to go to.
Yeah, I would echo that as well. I think that it's really an unknown issue. I can't tell you the number of times I tell people what I do for a living, and they're surprised that there are any homeless children in Cincinnati. And so I think that's just the fact that it exists is something that's not sufficiently known, and all the causes of it. And as we said, there are a lot of misconceptions about what causes it, and especially with the child population, they've done nothing wrong. And we really need to focus on how we can keep them connected to their education and how we can improve their circumstances to break the cycle. And if you just ignore it, it's just bound to repeat itself.
And Joe is calling from Eastgate. Joe, you're on Cincinnati Edition. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been teaching for two decades or so, but I have noticed in the past 5-10 years just an increase in homelessness. And the two concerns that I have, and then I want to ask your question of that, is one is a lot of the homeless kids I see don't appear homeless because they're bouncing around. They live with uncle for a month, and they get kicked out, and they live with a neighbor for a month. And so they appear to have an address, but in essence, they're homeless. And then, two, what can you do to preserve or maintain the integrity of that education for a kid that doesn't know where he's going to be at the end of a school day? Because there's some bright kids out there that are just, in my opinion, getting lost.
Lori?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just making the kids comfortable enough to share their circumstances with their teachers, anybody that they find in the school building who is connected to them, and as well as just working with the youth service center so that they can help them and make sure that they're being identified and can stay in their school of origin so they can progress academically and not fall behind. And I think the other thing is, too, we need to get more mentors out there. We have a wonderful mentoring program, too, in our school district. And a lot of these teens, they need role models that would let them know that, you know, what they're going through is maybe a fleeting moment and there's ways out of it, and education is one of them.
Jared, you want to what?
Yeah, and I would say that, I mean, through our shelter, our goal would be to help them succeed in school, to teach those self-sufficiency skills. So we think the way to best do that would be to try to provide that stable environment. So we do have a pretty strict program schedule we try to stick to as far as they come home from school, we do tutoring, we do a snack, they would go to dinner, then they do chores after. So we try to maintain that stability to where if they are in our shelter, then they know exactly when they're going to be doing something, you know, what's expected of them. And we think that would help alleviate some of those, you know, worrisome factors that they would have as far as, you know, what they're going to eat that night and sort of what they're going to do. So,
Joe, we appreciate your phone call. Before we run out of time, there's a couple things I want to make sure that we touch on. Obviously, to do this work takes funding. And Faces Without Places. Where does your funding come from?
Right, so we're a 501c3 organization, and we do not receive any public funding. Our primary source of funds is local grants from local foundations, some of the foundation arms of larger corporations here in Cincinnati and nationally, and then also individual donations make up a large portion of what we do. And we have some events, and then also we're a member of Community Shares, a group here in Cincinnati that does workplace campaigns, and we're the recipient of some of their funding.
Lori?
Well, I get majority of my funding comes through McKinney-Vento Homeless Education Act funding, and that's a 3-year grant, which will be up again in 2014-15 school year. Neediest Kids of All and Faces Without Places, but I also accept donations as well as for emergency fund that I have that I use for things that are not covered by those grants.
Jared, what about the Brighton Center?
So the Brighton Center gets a lot of federal funding as well. We also get money from different grants and foundations. And the Youth Services Department specifically, our street outreach program and our shelters paid primarily through Health and Human Services federal, so HUD grants. But we also have, at the shelter, there's a large fundraiser that they do called the Mardi Gras for Northern Kentucky, where it's in the Northern Kentucky Convention Center, and it actually, the funds we receive from that actually help pay our food budget for the whole year. So that's how we provide the meals for the youth, you know, on the weekends, and the dinners at night, breakfast. When youth are home from school, we provide the lunch that way. So it's a lot of private fundraising, but then as well, you know, we get funding from grants and foundations.
And we're just quickly running out of time. Jarrett, does your organization take volunteers?
Absolutely, we do. Anytime.
And what about Faces Without Places?
Yes, absolutely.
And we do want to let you know that there are links to all of these websites through our website, WVXU.org. Thank you all for being here. We've been discussing the increasing number of homeless children nationwide and the problems and challenges it creates for these kids. My guests were Lori Eifert, the Project Home Coordinator for Covington Independent Public Schools, Ramin Mohajer, the Executive Director of Faces Without Places, and Jared Spezak, the Outreach Coordinator for Brighton Center. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.